We're kicking off a new sermon series today on generosity called The Generous Life. Now, we do this every now and again, so if you're new here, we don't speak about these topics every week, just so you know. But it's something that Jesus is teaching on probably more than we realize, probably more than we'd want to know. and also that he lived out so beautifully. So it's very worthwhile to have a look at this. It's going to be a three-week series. I'm very excited to speak about this. It's a topic that's been in my heart for a long time. I think it's an appropriate time to speak about it now. We're just going to... I believe that you're going to benefit greatly from understanding biblical principles around generosity. Now, generosity is not all about money. Just so you know, for those who are already reaching for their wallets going like, nope, like, stay away. Generosity is not all about money. Yes, it definitely applies to the issue of money. And we're going to look into that a bit more next week. But when we start off, I want you to understand that generosity is about so much more than our finances. The way that Jesus teaches about generosity, he points to something much, much bigger. Basically, I would say generosity is essentially love put into practice. Love put into practice. Did you know that the Dutch have not one word for generosity, but two? Who would have known that the Dutch would have two words for generosity? It's we translate generosity in two different ways. One is vrijgevig, which basically would mean, translated back, freely giving. And there's another word, and it's ruimhartig. It's having a spacious heart. It's having a space in your heart to give space in your heart for others. And it's in those terms, in like freely giving and having a spacious heart, that I want to approach the topic of generosity. Jesus is calling us to freely give from not only our finances, but to freely give from our time and energy as well. He's calling us to have room in our hearts for people inside and outside our community to pray, to be available to them. That's why I love the Overweeghuis so much, that we can be generous as a church in our time and in our energy, and also in our giving towards it, to make this happen and to bless others and to make this world a better place. That's really essentially what generosity is. And what we're going to look at today is this passage that will also approach generosity in a much broader way than only finances. And this is a level of generosity that Jesus is calling us to, that's going to be a lifelong challenge for all of us. I would say that the passage we're about to read now is a dangerous passage. What would happen if we'd actually apply this? Let's look at Luke chapter 6, verse 27. We're going to read all the way until 38, although we break it into parts, so first going to read until 35. The rest will come later in the message. But to you who are willing to listen... So I hope that applies to you, that you came here with open ears, willing to listen. To you that are willing to listen, I say, this is Jesus talking, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who hurt you. If someone slaps you on the cheek, offer the other cheek also. If someone demands your coat, offer your shirt also. Give to anyone who asks. And when things are taken away from you, don't try to get them back. Do to others as you would like them to do to you. If you love only those who love you, why should you get any credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you get any credit? Even sinners do that much. And if you lend money only to those who can repay you, why should you get any credit? Even sinners will lend to other sinners for full return and interest. Love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend to them without expecting to be repaid. Then your reward from heaven will be very great. Just a quick question to all of you here gathered today. Who actually applies all of this? Well, even if you do, you would probably be humble enough not to raise your hand. I mean, that's my question when I'm reading this. Like, who actually does this? Who actually does this? Who, I mean, to love your enemies, that's crazy. To bless those who curse you. I was in the car yesterday and someone came really, really close. And I let him know that I wasn't happy, and he let me know that he wasn't happy with me, and I wasn't blessing the person that was cursing me. Who actually does this? Who has that generosity in their heart to actually bless others, even though we don't expect anything from them, even though they cannot do anything back to us, even though the good that we give will be probably repaid with evil? What Jesus is teaching here in this passage, I would say, is absolutely revolutionary. It was back then, it still is today. And living up to the challenge that Jesus is giving us here will be a lifelong journey for all of us. Now, I want to discuss three important principles around generosity, which is the essence, I think, of this message in this sermon. Starting with principle one, generosity is sacrificial. Generosity is sacrificial. So we all hopefully understand that it's better to do good than to do evil. I can safely assume that we all would say, like, let's do good instead of evil. That's something we can all gather behind. You know, politeness, hospitality, care for each other. Those are important things. We all, we can all sign on the dotted line that's what we believe in. But the generosity that Jesus is calling to goes a lot further than just doing good, just being nice, just being polite or hospitable. The type of life and the type of love put in practice requires His love to work through us. We cannot do this in our own strength. This requires God to meet us with His love and transform us completely so that we could even live this out. We're not going to be able to pull this off just by willpower or just out of love as a felt emotion. This is the love of God that needs to consume us completely before we could live this out. And I think there's a lot of people that, do good to others, that have this desire to make the world a better place. You don't have to be a Christian for that. But just doing good is not necessarily generosity. Jesus is calling us to a generosity that first considers the gain and not the cost. And so true generosity is sacrificial. It costs you something. If it doesn't cost you anything, it's just doing good. It's not generosity. Generosity really costs you something. But when we freely give from what we have to give, our time, our energy, our knowledge, our finances, our efforts, our prayers, when we freely give from it to benefit others instead of ourselves, that's generosity. And let me just give you a couple of small examples. Doing good is getting coffee for your colleague at work. It's doing good, it's being nice. Generosity, I'd say, is buying him a snack as well without him asking for that, or without asking the money back. Doing good is shooting up a prayer when you hear someone's not doing well. Shooting up prayer. That's shooting up a prayer. In Dutch we call it schietgebedje. That's funny. But generosity is going down on your knees for a while to intercede for someone that's not doing well. That's generosity. That's giving freely of your time and effort in prayers. Doing good would be calling up someone that's going through something, that's ill. Or generosity would be visiting and bringing a meal. So just understand the difference between just doing good, being nice, being a good person, and living generously. These are just a couple of small examples, but I think these small choices that we can make would point us, would lead us to a bigger life of generosity. And so when we start to practice generosity in these smaller things, ultimately we can begin to characterize who we really are. I'm doing the Bible in 1 year with Nicky Gumbel, and I came across this one story. He's got some time to fill, commenting the whole Bible within 1 year, and he's telling this story about Mother Teresa that hopefully you've heard about. Teresa from Calcutta, who was there as a nun serving the poor, and His story was that a guy noticed that her feet were actually very misformed. He was wondering why, and he asked around in the team. And they told him that every time that people would donate shoes, and the nuns and others would get some new shoes, she would always pick last. She would always pick the ones that were left over, and usually they were too small. So through always wearing shoes that were too small, her feet got misformed. Think about what you want. It's maybe a little bit weird and extreme, but it's a beautiful example of sacrificial generosity, of really choosing for yourself last and choosing others first, choosing to benefit others first. When we give sacrificially, what we'll do is we'll reflect God's generosity, because He is our ultimate example of generosity. We see that in Jesus. He first saw the gain and then the cost. He went to the cross because of the joy that was set before Him. He first looked at the gain and then at the cost. We see this revolutionary generosity in His teaching, ultimately in His life. And so that leads me to the second point, second principle, is that generosity points people to a generous God. That's why we live generously, because we want it to point to a God that is generous, and we want that character of God to be reflected in our lives as well. Jesus is calling us to pursue this type of generosity because He wants us to reflect the generosity of our God. Verse 35-36, you will truly, so when you do all these things that Jesus just talked about, it's continuing the passage. When you do all these things, you will truly be acting as children of the Most High, for He is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. You must be compassionate, just as your Father is compassionate. See, the generosity that Jesus is describing and that He's calling us to really is the generosity of our God, of the God that we worship. He loved us while we were still sinners, even to the point of death, even to the point of death on the cross. And so Jesus reveals a God that freely gives from what He has, that freely offers up the most precious thing that He has to benefit others, for the gain of others. Jesus reveals to us a God that freely gives grace, that freely gives forgiveness, that freely provides for our needs, heals our sickness, restores our brokenness, and that is incredibly patient with our stubbornness. At least, thank God, He is with mine. And so, having received all of these things from Him, our response is a life of generosity, generously giving from what we have back to Him and back to others. So our generosity points people to a supremely generous God. That's my question really today is, what would happen if we'd actually live out the generosity that Jesus is calling us to? What if all Christians in the whole world would live up to this type of generosity that Jesus is calling us to? What would happen to this city if we would start doing this? Like completely, wholeheartedly, bless this city. That's really our vision for the whole bless this city projects that we're doing and the things that we're investing in. It's this heart. We want our blessing the city to point people to the God that we believe in, to the God that has shown His generosity, His freely giving of His grace to us. What we've experienced, we want to hand out. We want to spread. We want them to understand the love of Jesus. So Jesus speaks so passionately about generosity because, first of all, our God is a generous God, and He wants us to see, He wants us to be reflected in His people as well. But secondly, because this can ignite a true revolution. I've been thinking a lot lately about Christian apologetics. Apologetics is a technical term for like the defense of faith, or how we present the faith to those who do not believe. And I think for a long time, we've done this mostly or mainly through rational arguments. You know, there's all these questions raised into like the existence of God and the story of the resurrection of Jesus, the trustworthiness of the Bible. And we've come up with all these great arguments to refute that and to help people understand why the Bible is actually so reliable, how it's hard to deny the resurrection of Jesus since there's so much proof that there has to be a God, and that ultimately science is not the enemy. Science will only point us to the beauty of our Creator and the beauty of His creation. But then the world is really changing. We don't live in a world that's convinced by rational arguments anymore. We live in a post-Christian, for one, post-truth, which is super weird, and a post-modern society. And most of these arguments have to do with modernity, with modern arguments against religion or against believing in a God. So as the world is changing, we need to change our apologetics, and we need to understand that ultimately what we need is a lived apologetic where the life and teaching of Jesus is reflected completely in the community of the believers. And so we're all responsible for the defense of faith, where there's a consistency in what we practice and what we preach. Because the secular gospel is that if you have ultimate freedom, you will have ultimate happiness. Yet since the 1950s, happiness, just general happiness in the Western world, plummeted down to level zero. So it's an inconsistent message that the world's preaching. But what if the message that we're preaching is consistent with the life that we're living? That's our ultimate defense of faith. Give you something to think about this week. So when our lives show this outrageous generosity of God, it will make people more receptive to receive the gospel, the good news. They will understand that if they see this generosity lived out in God's people, it will become more believable or more acceptable to them to also believe that the grace of God is actually for them as well. The people of God point to the generosity of God. Thirdly, generosity unleashes blessing. Now, before you tune out and dismiss me as a prosperity teacher, please don't. I have a lot against the prosperity gospel. I would say, try to explain the prosperity gospel to Paul and see how that works out. So the prosperity teaching is, I would say, false gospel. It's mixing the promises of God with like our Western confused materialism. So I'm very much against any type of prosperity teaching. But what I'm here to do is present to you the generosity gospel of how our generosity unleashes God's blessing so that we can return it again with generosity. Look at Luke 6, verse 38. Give and you will receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. This is an idea from the marketplace where people would buy grain and then would have these long garments, like his long clothes, and then I can't really do it, but so like this, but then bigger. And then when you'd buy grain, it would be poured into your lap and then pressed down, shaken together, make room for more. So you have this overflowing bag of grain in your jacket, basically. So it's this idea of an overflowing measure, running over, poured into your lap. The amount that you give will determine the amount that you get back. So these are Jesus' words, not pointing to a generosity gospel, to a prosperity gospel, but I would say to a generosity gospel, where he's inviting us into this cycle of generosity and blessing, and some generosity and blessing. So the prosperity gospel would say that when you are prosperous, that's God's stamp of approval that you're doing well. And so it's this self-affirming thing. This is very disturbing. But the generosity gospel, I would say, is that we give. It starts with God's generosity. He gives freely of his grace and his blessing. And the breath of life comes from him. Just our life, we've received it from him. And we recognize that everything we have ultimately comes from him. And from that understanding, we're giving generously to the people around us. And again, giving here is about a lot more than money, but our time and our energy and our efforts and our prayer and everything. So we give generously to others. We give generously to God. And when we do that, he will bless us in return. And when he blesses us, we'll have more to give away freely. And so it's this cycle of blessing, God's blessing and our generosity, God's blessing and our generosity. It's when this happens when we choose to no longer see our resources as our resources, but as God's resources. This is what happens when we, like Abraham, was referred to last week, when we, like Abraham, put the most precious thing that we have up on the altar, sacrificing it to God. Remember the story that God asked him to do it with Isaac, which is very weird because God is not like that. He doesn't do human sacrifices, thank God. But when Abraham does that, God intervenes, says, no, stop that, don't do that, and he provides a ram to offer instead, because that's more God's style. But this is what happens when we put the most precious thing that we have up on the altar, and we live generously, we give from what we have. God provides again so that we can be even more generous. Living generously will unleash God's blessing and favor on your life so that you can be even more generous. We are blessed to be a blessing. And so I believe that the way that we handle our resources is ultimately a test as well to see if we could handle more. See, God's blessing doesn't raise your standard of living, but your standard of giving. So let me conclude two more quick passages pointing us to this one last principle about generosity, and that's first things first. First things first. Matthew 6, verse 19. Don't store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. So this is, again, a little bit more about, you know, material things. When you speak about generosity and you take Jesus' words, it's going to be about stuff quite often, so can't avoid it. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. Listen to this. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Just feel free to underline this in your Bible. We'll come back to it a little bit later. So Jesus knew how quickly we all would get up in we would get up in these temporary things. You know, I'd say that and we'll look at this next time. The generosity and the trap of mammon. We'll look at this next week. But it's not only for people that have a lot. It's definitely also for people that have little, because we can all get caught up in money stuff. It doesn't matter if you have a lot or you have a little. We need to all understand how this works and how we can how finances or material things can become number one in our lives instead of God. So Jesus is pointing out here that in the end, our possessions and anything else that we might gather for ourselves really is just perishable. But through generosity, we express that we understand that stuff is just stuff. Stuff is just stuff. And our happiness and our fulfillment in life and our worship is in completely other things. See, we are not a people wandering around about the meaning of life. We have found it. We have found it in the Lord Jesus Christ. We have found the meaning in life in worshiping our great God. We're not looking around for meaning anymore in things or in pleasure or in being seen as a fantastically smart and highly accomplished person. We're not looking for meaning in those things anymore. We've already found it. So we cannot get caught up in materialistic thinking, because that would mean that we're trying to find meaning in something. But through our generosity, like seeing our resources not as our resources but as God's resources, and freely giving from it, will it's liberating, because we acknowledge everything that we have ultimately comes from God anyway. So it's not even mine to give. It's His. So we freely give, and we receive in return, and it's this beautiful cycle of generosity and blessing that that He is inviting us into. We kind of liberate ourselves from getting caught up in these things by living generously. So he also noticed that Jesus is saying, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. So often we approach this the other way around. Where the desires of your heart are, there your treasure will be. So something that we find very important, or something that we are completely behind, or something that's completely up to our standards, that's where we'll invest our money in, or time and effort and prayer, because that's worthwhile. Jesus says, invest first in what you know is important, and then see what it does to your heart. First invest, and then your heart will follow after. And this especially applies to His kingdom. So last verse of the day, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things that we can worry about so much, all these things, they will be given to you as well. There's this solid promise that when we choose to live generously, blessing the people around us, blessing God and His kingdom, investing our time, our talents, our money, our knowledge, our whatever we have to give, when we do this, there's a solid promise of God that we will lack nothing. We will lack nothing. And so our generosity is this response to everything that we've received from Him. And by putting His kingdom first, we acknowledge that everything that we have ultimately comes from Him anyway.